it's the importance of living authentically. So we grow up in life, we want to belong, we want to fit in, we want to be accepted. This is where we start putting on the masks. You can see this part of me. I'm happy for you to see this little part of me and like see this mask, but I don't want you to see anything else. I'll change this part even so that you like it. I'll show you this part and I'll change it so that you're happy with it. And then the other person does the same as well. And they never actually see each other. We do this in all parts of our lives until we're aware of it. So it comes back to being present. But the way we live more authentically is that we choose who we actually want to impress. We choose who we want to be happy with us. And the emphasis of that needs to be ourselves more than anyone else. It's got to be us. And so that's what it means by living authentically. Choose to impress yourself rather than choosing to impress other people.
Hello and welcome to the podcast, 10 Lessons Learned, where we uncover wisdom for career, business, and life to an international audience of rising leaders. In other words, you'll find valuable insights that you can't find in the textbook because it took us years to learn this stuff. My name is Jeffrey Wang, the founder of the Professional Development Forum and your host for today. This podcast is sponsored by the Professional Development Forum, which helps diverse young professionals of any age find fulfillment in the modern workplace. Today, we're joined by Harry Goldberg. Harry is a director, a results coach, and a meditation teacher at Purpose Advisory. He's the host of the Success with Purpose podcast, proud father of two incredible daughters, and husband to an amazing woman. His career journey has come a long way from studying commerce and economics at University of New South Wales to financial services, financial advice, and finally to empowering clients and peers to achieve greater passion for life, achieve greater results for themselves, and become positive agents of changing their world. I will come back to this, Harry, to find out more and to listen to some amazing mentoring conversations with on Success with Purpose. You can engage with Harry directly on LinkedIn and level up your life purpose advisory. So
I got to jump in and just say it's always strange hearing that back to me. Yes, I know that I was involved in writing it, but it's still strange hearing it back. You make me sound as if I know what I'm talking about. It's crazy.
Well, it was my interpretation of you because I had an absolutely most enjoyable conversation with you on the Success with Purpose podcast. Right. And I, you know, for the purpose of our listeners, you know, this is a podcast that is essentially you talking to people who you find to be those with the most holistic success. Right. Which sort of begs the question, how do you go about picking your guests on your podcast?
Yeah, cool. Is this a lesson learned? Nah, just the look, I endeavor, like I set up the podcast, basically it was interviews or conversations I want to record with a whole bunch of my mentors to start with. And as I was recording conversations with them, I started sharing it with clients so that they could be able to grow from it. I kept getting more and more feedback, positive feedback going, no, you should do more. Like, what are you doing, Harry? Like, come on, do more of this stuff. Don't stop there. Like, these are awesome conversations. I'm learning so much from it. And the main reason is because most people really struggle to find mentors, which I'm guessing we'll discuss in one of the rules as well today. But throughout that, I kind of just started going, okay, great. Who do I want to learn from? That for me is a mentor, someone that I can learn more from. Like, who can I humble myself in front of and say, I want to learn more that you know? And that doesn't mean that the person's more successful than me in every area, however you define success, right? It doesn't mean that that person has it all worked out. But they've done something that's pretty extraordinary or pretty exceptional. And I endeavor to learn from their range of experiences. So someone, you're asking about the criteria. So someone who has had an array of experiences, I'd say that probably 90% of the guests in their 40s or more, no, like 40s to 60s, there aren't that many people who are younger. They have a level of expertise in something that is incredible expertise to be able to share. And they have life wisdom, whether that's as a result of being a parent or helping parents, or whether that's as a result of going through a failed marriage and then creating a successful marriage, or if it's because they're busy being a relationship coach and helping people with their marriages, right? Like all this kind of stuff, they've got expertise to share. So life experience, a clear level of achievement in their life. They're creating a positive impact and they have expertise that they want to share. And so if someone meets those criteria, such as yourself and such as some of the other guests that you've had on as well. I'm not sure when this episode will be released, but maybe some of those guests will be shared as well. And then I just want to share their message with the world. And the way that we learn it is through understanding their journey and the steps they've taken when they've faced particular challenges that they've been in.
Indeed. And there's so much that I resonate with in that message right there. Right. A couple of things I'll pick out is you use the word humble yourself in front of. And, you know, I think that's really the key in having that open mind to be able to receive wisdom from sources that you may or may not, you know, sort of expect. And that's something that I think we share with you in the 10 Lessons Learned podcast, in that we're interested to talk to people that may not be, as you described them, you know, successful in the conventional sense, you know, may not have the trappings or the appearance of success, you know, maybe fame or fortune or whatever you, or power. But at the same time, you know, these people have something of wisdom to share with the world that we believe will make the world a better place. And the second part of what you said there, which we really resonated with, is this deep desire to share that wisdom with the world. And as a result, you know, this is why I thought you'd be a perfect guest for this episode, because, you know, I think you have that deep desire, and we know certainly through your lessons, I would love to uncover some of the wisdom that you've discovered in your life and certainly in, you know, throughout your time in the podcast. So without further ado, let's jump straight into it then.
Look, if I can just jump in quickly before we dive right in, I'd just really like to emphasize that I don't have all the answers. Like I'm flattered and I'm honored, I'm humbled by being invited on here. But I mean, there are far more intelligent, experienced, skilled, wise, like full of wisdom individuals out there who are able to shed much more insight and be able to help in terms of the journey that you're on. So I can share the lessons I've learned, but ultimately I'm kind of, none of it's original. And a lot of it's kind of just regurgitating for what I've learned from my mentors and what I've learned from life experience. So I'll be sharing these lessons that a lot of the other people who are on here who have been on previous episodes have exceptional. And so I'm honored to be a part of it. And I mean, a lot of the people that I've interviewed on my podcast are exceptional as well. And so there's a lot to learn from there too. So just know that I don't have all the answers. If you hear what I'm saying and you agree with it and you want to apply, great, do it. Awesome. I hope I'm making a difference in your life. But if you don't, or if something doesn't feel quite right, then listen to that. You don't need to take what I'm saying as gold.
And the reality is that I believe that humility that you've just demonstrated is the key to wisdom, right? Having the ability to acknowledge that you don't have all the answers. And in fact, as we have covered before, there is a lesson from one of our great guests that says there's nothing new under the sun. And that's exactly that lesson. Like everything he was sharing didn't come from him, but it was, I suppose, it's what we call the old-fashioned wisdom, you know, time-tested wisdom that's always been true that he's sharing with our audience. And that's something that we'll be very keen to hear from. All right, well, then let's just dive right in then, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
So lesson number one, you say that life sucks. Or does it? Now, I like this one. This is a bit outside the square. Honestly, I don't know what you mean by that.
Okay. Well, let me describe it. I've been sharing this quote with my daughter ever since she was about 10, 11 months old. She doesn't quite get it. She doesn't have a developed prefrontal cortex, or at least you don't until you're in your 20s. But basically, what I mean by this is, well, this is a phrase. Your experience of life is directly correlated with your perception of that experience. So your experience of life, what you're experiencing and how you live your life is almost synonymous, almost, with how you're choosing to perceive your experience as well. So if you think about like what are our lives made of, they're made of experiences. And what each experience means is ultimately what defines each experience, the meaning that we apply, right? Mm-hmm. You can go to the extreme of Viktor Frankl in Man's Search for Meaning, and it's the meaning that we're applying to things. Life is made of meaning based on the meaning that we choose to perceive it with.
Yep.
So, but here's the catch, is that most people don't realize that they're capable of being able to assign their own meanings to the experiences which they're going through. So if your life is made of experiences, and then you can choose what each of those experiences mean, then you can literally choose to have a great experience of your life or a terrible experience. And this is the caveat, is almost irregardless of circumstances. So if someone is getting really aggressive towards you, you can genuinely choose to have different beliefs around it, or you can choose to have different perception of the experience of someone being really aggressive towards you. They could be really aggressive and you can start to perceive it as you're in threat and you're in danger and it's all really scary and you got to run, or how dare they do that, or they shouldn't do that, those types of things. You can do that. Or you can choose to perceive it as, hey, that person's having a really bad day. You can choose the compassion path. You can choose to remove yourself from the situation without the stress or the anxiety of, I'm really scared. Right? You can choose what action you take based on the meaning that you're assigning to the circumstance.
Okay. So I've heard of that before. And, you know, I suppose, you know, it's the meaning that you do have that choice of the meaning, but I guess just playing a bit of devil's advocate here. So, you know, we all know that life shit happens in life. And in fact, I remember quite distinctly at a particular work situation where the biggest shit just hit the fan. And one of my colleagues very jokingly said, I choose to feel happy about this. You know, are we just deluding ourselves? Isn't there some form of reality? Or are we so powerful that whatever we choose to focus on in terms of our meaning creation then becomes our own reality?
Yeah, I think there's a big difference between what you say and what you do. So I choose to be happy about this. This sounds really wonderful. I'm so happy. Like that's one thing, right? Like you can, Tony Robbins talks about this all the time. I love it. I can't escape his description of it. It's like, if you want to be happy, you got to get the weeds out by the roots and rip it out. You can't just go, I'm happy, I'm happy, I'm happy, I'm happy, I'm happy, I'm happy. It doesn't work. You can't just use words to be able to shift the way that you feel. You got to use something which changes meaning. The way I approach that primarily is through awareness and mindfulness. And that's our next lesson. Mm-hmm. But the way Tony Robbins talks about it is someone really worthwhile listening to is, he talks about this idea of there's a triad, right? So there are these three things which all contribute towards our emotional state and how happy we actually are, right? Not how happy we say we are, but how happy we actually are. Yeah. He talks about your focus or meaning. This is cool. I haven't shared this in ages, so thank you. I'm remembering it as I say it. He talks about your physiology, and he starts talking about the types of questions that we're asking. Questions, which is also directs where our focus is, and the meaning is kind of the language which we're using. So it's meaning and language, it's questions and focus, and then it's physiology, which is our physical body, right? Like if you've gone for a run, you're going to feel different to if you've just like, I don't know, had it, you've got a hangover, it's different. And I'm specifically in this particular rule talking about the meaning we're applying to things.
Okay.
And the focus.
Okay. Well, and I like that because that's a perfect segue for lesson number two, as you mentioned.
It is.
So lesson number two, you say, what's happening? And it's not what you think. Okay. Honestly, I have no idea what you're talking about here either.
It's good. It's catchy. It's good. And too cryptic maybe. But look, what I'm talking about here really is the power of presence and mindfulness. Mm. So if we want to be successful at choosing the meaning in our lives, then the first part is we need to be vividly aware of what that meaning actually already is that we're assigning to our experience.
Yep.
So if we're saying that you're drinking something that's making you feel really crap, it's like a really weak poison. The more you drink, the more crap you feel, right? And the less you drink, the better you feel. But you're drinking more and more. The first step is you got to stop the poison. Like you got to stop consuming the thing that's causing problems. And the only way you can do that is by knowing what's actually causing the feeling that you're having. So if we're talking about this in the context of meanings, which is also abstract meaning of the experience that we're having, we need to be aware of what we already believe about the experience. Most of the time we get angry and we don't even know what we're angry about. We come up with things that we think we're angry about, but no. And if you go deeper, there's something beneath that anger. Maybe it's fear. Maybe it's feeling like you don't belong. Maybe it's that you're not loved, or maybe you really want love. Like whatever it is, you got to be really vividly aware of what meaning you're already assigning to the experience before you can start to choose the meaning that you're going to apply. And even more importantly, is that we need to be able to build up the skill, build up the muscle that means that we can know this in the moment when it's happening rather than weeks or years later. Do you want an example of this? Like a really practical example?
Yep.
I was presenting to a group of employees. There were 70 employees in this organization that were all on the Zoom call. I was in my office And we had a newborn. My wife was trying to put our newborn down, and my three-year-old daughter, I think she was 3 years old at the time, she decided to start kind of like scratching at the door. She knew that I was in the office. She knew I was in a meeting. I knew that my wife had said, don't go to daddy's office. And I told her that earlier. She had no reason. Like, if I was going to treat her like an adult, then she would have no reason to be coming there. Like, no excuse whatsoever. But she's only 3 years old. And so I was in the middle of presenting and teaching about meditation and mindfulness and being able to remain present and being able to let go, ultimately. And throughout the conversation, I noticed that she was there. And I had a few options. I could just ignore that she's there and then continue on with presenting. Or I could have interrupted, like paused the presentation for a moment and gone off it and addressed my daughter and then told her to go away. Or I could have paused and then looped my daughter into the conversation. Now, the meaning my objective was and is always to enhance the relationship that I have with my daughter, not the behavior. I don't want to control the behavior per se. I want to enhance the relationship. And the emphasis on that meant that I needed to be aware of all the things that was going on in that moment. And through practice of mindfulness and being present with what's going on in my mind, I was able to go, okay, right now I'm fearful that if I pause the presentation, that my daughter won't choose to go away, that she'll want to come involved, be involved. I'm worried that I'm pausing. It's not a professional look. I'm worried that this is going to lose some people's interest. Maybe some people are going to drop off. Maybe I'm going to limit the amount of impact that I actually can have. I'm worried, what are they going to be thinking of me? I'm worried about what my daughter's thinking right now. There was a lot of worry which was coming up in that moment. Indeed. And our minds are crazy, right? They really are. There's a storm inside. If you learn to just sit with it and learn to observe it, then you can at least see that there's a storm there rather than going off sailing into the ocean, pretending there's all smooth seas. Mm-hmm. What ended up happening was I decided to loop her in, and she was there on my lap. She only interrupted once or twice, and that was fine as well. And the comments during, like in the text box while I was presenting, as well as the feedback to the HR director afterwards and that she shared with me, is like they were like people were really like they were admiring it. It brought home the actual point that I was making, that you don't need your circumstances to be a particular way in order for you to be happy or in order for you to enjoy yourself or feel joyful or feel calm. And at the same time, so not only did it, as a result of being mindful with exactly the meaning that I was assigning to something and then choosing the meaning I was assigning it to, and then focusing on what was most important to me, which is my relationship with my daughter. So not only had I, through doing all of that, did I reach that goal of connecting with my daughter, mm-hmm. and she knows I'm always here, always available. But then also my clients who I was presenting to loved it even more. They had even more gratitude for it. And it was an even more of a success because it drove home the message. So it was a win-win, as opposed to imagine if I wasn't even aware of all that stuff going on and I just started feeling shitty about it all. And I just ignored her outside. She can't get in. She wasn't tall enough to open the door handle. And so there was no way that she would have been able to interrupt. And I'll just be thinking of maybe she'd start crying. And I'm like, how could it? And it just, my message would have come across very differently. The words might have been the same. My experience would have been different. And then my impact would have been restricted.
Yeah. So, but would someone from the outside be able to see what you're experiencing? Or is that not even really the point?
That's not the point. Firstly, yes, but that's not the point. Like you know people in your life who are just like, I'm thinking of the most extroverted examples, like bubbly and happy. And like, as soon as they're in the room, like they kind of just lift you up and you just kind of feel really energized around them.
Yep.
And you know, people where you find yourself at the end of the conversation, like it's much slower and it's more, and you know, people who like just infuriate you because they're angry all the time. Okay. Now, the person who's super bubbly, they're having a bubbly experience of life. Like they're just happy all the time. They've got that energy, right? Except when they're not. And if they're not mindful, then it's just their personality. Then they go through really dark swings and stuff, right? But in that moment when they're feeling incredible, like they're just feeling amazing because they want to feel amazing. They want you to feel amazing too, but whatever. They're feeling amazing. You feel their energy.
And you get drawn to that. You can't help it being drawn to it.
You can't help it. So it does make an impact, but you also feel it when you know, like, you know how there are people who are like just going to pretend to be happy. Like the example you gave before, oh, I'm just going to, let's just be happy about this. This is going to be wonderful. It doesn't work. But you don't feel it. You don't feel that they're actually experiencing it. And if you don't feel that they're experiencing it, then it's nothing.
It's not real. Like it. So that awareness means that you can have a profound impact on your own state of mind. And as a result of that, then, yeah, that's going to emanate and it becomes your reality and, you know, sort of bleeds into other people's reality as well. So that you can essentially have a much more positive impact. So I like that. I like that lesson. So lesson number three, don't be a slave to the society's expectations. I like where this one's going, you know, having grown up in a very much a collectivist society. You know, I understand all too important the power of expectations and how you're sort of brought up to conform. So I'm guessing this is about being your own person and living your best life.
Yeah. Look, it is. Basically, it's the importance of living authentically at its core. So we grow up in life. We want to belong. We want to fit in. We want to be accepted. We want to, basically, it's our human nature. It's literally wired into our genetics. And into our DNA as to how we grow up and how we behaviorally start to develop. We yearn for attachment to the attachable figures that are around us. And we even try too hard for those who aren't attachable, right?
Yeah.
And they become very poor attachment figures and then becomes quite insecure. But we always want to belong and fit in. And the thing is that most of the time, we make unconscious decisions to be able to achieve. We're not aware of what we're doing to make sure that we feel like we belong and to feel that we fit in, to feel that we're loved and accepted. So the anecdote here is that this is where we start putting on the masks, right? You can see this part of me. I'm happy for you to see this little part of me and like see this mask, but I don't want you to see anything else, right? I'll change this part even so that you like it. I'll show you this part and I'll change it so that you're happy with it. And then the other person does the same as well. And they never actually see each other. It's like if you make your house just so that other people are going to like it, and then you're only going to design and curate and spend money on and all that kind of stuff on the areas that other people are going to see, right? Your living room and the bathroom downstairs and maybe the kitchen, perhaps. But that's about it, right? And that's all you want other people to see. If you focus so much energy there, then those people are going to start thinking, oh yeah, you're so clean and neat and wonderful and everything's so amazing. The rest of your house is an absolute pigsty. And the rest of your house is a mess or cheap stuff or crap or whatever, right? And then you're trying to impress people who like that sort of thing. And then that means that you know deep down inside that those people who are coming to visit your house, they're not really impressed with you. Yeah. They're impressed with some fake version, clean version of you. We do this in all parts of our lives until we're aware of it. So it comes back to the being present. But the way we live more authentically is that we choose who we actually want to impress. We choose who we want to be happy with us. And the emphasis of that needs to be ourselves more than anyone else. It's got to be us. And so that's what it means by living authentically. Choose to impress yourself rather than choosing to impress other people.
Yeah, I agree with that in principle. I think the hard part is how, right? How do you find the courage to be authentic?
Start asking yourself, well, why are you being inauthentic? And recognize that takes courage to be inauthentic as well. It's just a default, like it's habitual. We're habitually holding on to what we were developing when we were young. And maybe that was helpful then, but it's not going to be helpful in the future. It's like you have a pen which you write with. And let's just imagine that there's absolutely zero need for a pen in another 30 years. You're still going to hold on and carry the, like that pen or that whole pencil case or the whole stationery desk that you have. Like there's no point doing it if it's not necessary in those few years. And so what we used when we were young helped us a lot when we were young, but it doesn't help us now. It's scary. It takes a lot of courage to become more authentic or just being more of yourself. It means you've got to care less about what other people think genuinely. And that means that you've got to confront the fears of what will happen if you no longer care what other people think or you no longer act that way. Will those people still like me? Will they still be my friend? Will I still get clients? Will my employer still be thinking about me for my next promotion? Will I be able to lead my team as well? All these questions start coming up, and they're important to see. At the same time, maybe some of the most successful career people, I'm just going to extreme stereotype. Let's just imagine a narcissistic lawyer who got to the top of the food chain, their executive partner or whatever it is, a law firm, they've got their mansion on the water and they've got their yacht and their fancy sports cars, right? And everything looks like it's amazing. But they're on their third marriage, their kids don't talk to them, their health's depleting, and their only meaning or only value they have left is what they're doing at work. Now, most of the people who are listening to this podcast, I'm guessing, are not going to be anywhere near that, right? They're already mindful enough to not end up going down that path. Or maybe they started going down that path and they've pulled themselves back to rein themselves in. But this is what I mean. If becoming that type of person sounds horrific to you, but that's the way that you're acting by just having the mask, well, then that's something you got to address. If being that person is what you want and you can honestly say that to yourself, that that's what you want in your life, great, cool, keep doing. You're living authentically. Keep going. Keep at it. But if you want something else for yourself, what I'm telling you, or my message that I'm hoping that you hear, is that I want you to be able to challenge it. And I'm hoping that this starts challenging. What do you actually want in your life? Ironically, that leads nicely into the next rule, I think.
Yeah, clearly. But before we go in there, though, I'll probably add a bit to that point, because I do agree with you in terms of the advice to challenges. So for many of us, it takes courage to realize that we don't want the things that the society tells us that we want. You know, we don't want to necessarily endure all the things that you have to endure in order to have that life. You know, the yacht, the big house, the high-end jobs, and the adoration of people. But quite frankly, a lot of us, I suppose, too scared to move away from that life because we're so attached to what it means. Little do we know that on the other side of that journey is you'll lose some friends, sure, but you'll end up with better friends. You'll lose some relationships, sure, but you'll end up with better relationships. And it does take courage to make that leap, but once you make it, you almost be asking yourself, why the hell do you ever bother? Why are you working so hard on jobs that you hate to buy stuff to impress the people you don't like? So thanks for sharing that. I'm 100% in agreement there. But moving on to lesson number 4, visualize the life you want.
In great detail, at least twice a year. That's my emphasis, right? So
okay.
How do I describe this best? I mean, there's a really cool Zig Ziglar quote. You can't hit a target you cannot see, and you can't see a target you don't have. You got to get clear about what you actually want from your life. I've referenced this a couple of times, right, in terms of your priorities and your values and what's most important. What do you want from your life? Who do you want to become? Why are you putting in all of this effort to achieve the outcomes that you're striving towards? All right now, I do this with clients. Obviously, I help them with their life vision, their what they're striving for in the future, like who they want to become, and their Let me try and add as much value as I can. So I'll try and help people avoid needing to get a coach to help them with vision. If you're still struggling, then get a coach and get the support. But the big impact, like a big focus on what we do, is to focus on helping our clients identify their purpose and live their purpose, like live a purposeful life. So the very first thing that you got to do is you got to identify what your mission statement is. And what I mean by this is the question. Like the question that anytime you face a difficult challenge, whatever the challenge might be, buying a property, upsizing your property, making a big investment decision, choosing who you're going to be marrying or where you're going to live or whether or not you have kids or whether or not you have an extra kid or choosing that particular career move or moving out and going into your own business or doing extra study or putting in extra effort or starting a new exercise regimen, literally whatever you can think of, right? You need a mission statement.
Yep.
That can help you address whatever that is. And then you need to know what that mission statement really means. So I'll give you an example. A common mission statement that comes up is something like, and by the way, sorry, there's a difference between our mission statement and the attributes that we want to have. and the outcome that we want to have for ourselves and the world. The mission statement lives in the middle. All right, so our attributes of being happy and great and whatever, that's an attribute. That's not your mission. Your mission is not to be happy, right? That's an attribute that you want to have. The outcome for yourself and world, like having lots of money, that's not the mission. The mission is not to make lots of money. The mission is why you're doing it. And that's where the power behind it comes. So when you take it from that lens and you go, let's just say someone says, well, my mission is to provide for my family. Okay, great. What does it mean to provide? What does it mean when you provide? And what do you mean by family? Is your family just your kids or just your spouse or your spouse and kids? Is it your parents, in-laws? Is it your siblings, your cousins? Is family for some people is people in their church group or their community or in their neighborhood, right? That's their family.
Yeah.
Some people I've even had refer to their family as like their clients. Like that's a level, like oh, the yeah. slightly mm-hmm. further distinction of family, right? Mm-hmm. Or their staff in their team. And so that's the first part, which really needs to be clarified if this is the mission statement. Mm-hmm. The other element of it is provide. What do you mean provide? Providing financially, providing emotionally, providing adventure, providing right. fun, providing new experiences, mm-hmm. providing wisdom or knowledge. Are you providing security and safety? Are you providing really nice, expensive things? Are you providing status? Are you providing influence or the ability to use your, like, you got to understand what are you providing and who you're providing it to. If your mission statement is something like, I provide for my family, because if you're not crystal clear about it, then you face a big challenge. Then how are you going to be able to deal with it? How can you handle that? So that's the first part of it. The second part is you got to be able to visualize the life that you want. Mm. So pick a day, like a work day, a day when you go to work or work-ish, right? Like a weekday. And imagine the home that you're living in. Like in 10 years down the future, right? 10 years time. Imagine the home that you're living in. Imagine the people that you spend your time with. Imagine the types of hobbies and the exercise, the type of lifestyle you have, what you're doing with the majority of your time. What is your career? Like, what are you working on? Describe it in detail. When we ask clients to describe the home that they live in, It's not just like a it's a nice home. Like no, it's like a beach shack, which is really nicely done, and it's got beautiful wooden floors and like dark wood cupboards all around. But the rest of it is all white and light, and it's got a beautiful marble top on the kitchen. And how many rooms does it have? And where are you spending most of your time? And what's the primary purpose? Is it the friends that can come over? Or is it more just like a small place that doesn't require much maintenance? Where exactly is it? It's within 10 meters of the beach, like all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And when you get clear on what that type of place looks like, mm-hmm. and then what you're doing with family and friends and career and income, then you start to get really clear on what you mm-hmm. actually want your life to look like.
But that's it's a hell of a lot harder than most people would realize, right? With that level of clarity. In my own personal journey, to have clarity is a pretty painful exercise, because when you decide what you want, you also have to decide what you don't want. Yep. This is probably a perfect segue to lesson number 5. If it's not a priority, it's a distraction.
Right. Before we dive into this aspect of not priority or distraction, there's one more exercise that people could do. In line with this 10 years, right? Like where you want to be. Imagine your ideal day and describe your ideal day. Give yourself all the prompts you want before you do the exercise. What time do you wake up? What do you do first thing? Who do you spend time with, if anyone, or do you go off and do your own exercise or meditation or whatever it is? Are you looking after your health? Are you spending time with the people that you love and care about? Are you involved with bringing your kids to school or walking the dogs or whatever it is? When do you kind of get into work and what you're actually doing and what type of tasks do you want to do? And do you actually want to get outside for lunch, or do you like the idea of kind of like just pushing through? Is that more like you? And then when it gets to the evening, who are you spending time with? What are you doing? When do you go to bed? Try and describe that in detail, and you're going to get some pretty curious insights, which can help you in defining what your ideal future will be. But then you're asking about, if it's not a priority, it's a distraction. Okay, so mm-hmm. I was hesitant to even write it down because I'm really still learning this one, right? Mm-hmm. The anecdote is Warren Buffett's 525 rule. He was asked, but I think it was his driver who asked him, Warren, how are you so successful? How can I be more successful as well? And the conversation was more geared towards career, but I like to be curious about this in the context of life overall. But he said, just focus, write down for me your 25 goals, like the 25 most important things, and then come back to me. It's okay, right? 25 most important things. Okay, Warren, I've went through the list and I spoke about it with my wife and I got really clear. These are the 25 things which are most important to me. I really like these 25 things and like that these would make my life great. I was like, okay, now tell me the top five. Order the top five for me. In like specifically the top five. I need to see all of those. Don't exclude something that you need and don't include something that shouldn't be there. Just the top five, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And what are those? I was like, I really tried really hard. I managed to get the five. I got the five things, the most important. So then he said, treat the other 20 as a distraction.
Oh.
The top five will make you successful. The other 20, like the bottom 20 of your 25, treat them like the enemy of your success because they're going to hold you back.
Wow.
And look, I think that not everyone is Warren Buffett. There's a reason why there aren't that many billionaires, right? For myself, where this has really worked well is like my family, number one priority. Still not getting it perfect, but they're number one priority. There's nothing else because family is the most important thing, always. Financial security is really important. Mm. Can't really have a healthy family environment unless you're taking care of your financial security and your health. So I find this quite challenging. I find it very difficult to really drill down to the top five things.
So I think maybe you're not meant to drill it down to five, and it may be a choice, right? So My view is that not everyone's going to be a Warren Buffett. Now, if you can do the 525, great. But the realities I know, they will be way too excruciating. And it also means that there are certain things that I actually really want, which I'll have to put on that 25 if that's what I really want. And unfortunately to me, then what it will mean is that maybe I will have to give up certain nights in with Netflix and relax. But maybe I don't want to give that up. So I think that there is, yeah, I think we just got to go into it knowing that everything in life is a trade-off and you have to make peace with the fact that maybe you're not going to be a billionaire, but every now and then you'll get a couple of nights off and that's the trade-off. And that's the mindset that you have to understand. So, all right, lesson number six, you can't control the outcome. Well, clearly you can, right? To some extent you can.
Yeah. I mean, you can to some extent, but you can't control it. You can influence it. Everything in your life, nothing is entirely out of your control and nothing is entirely within your control either. Like there's a spectrum, like 0.01% influence to 99.999% influence. But if you recognize that you can't control the outcome, then you start to leave a little bit of room for what could be. You start to leave a little bit of space for the potential of like right now and near term and also in the future. Like who knows exactly what's going to happen? Yes, you should have goals, right? Some people call this faith or trust that everything's going to work out fine. Everything's going to be okay. But the power in this is that if you focus too much on the outcome, then the journey is going to be painful for you, far from enjoyable.
Yep.
And if you focus too much on the outcome, then you're often going to do things that will actually avoid the outcome itself. So there's a quote which sticks with me, Jean de La Fontaine, I think. A person often meets his destiny on the road he took to avoid it. I actually only came across that quote as a result of Kung Fu Panda. Like a really simple example is there was a family, like we were at a family function and a family member had like this really cool fan, which was, it was cute. It was just this plastic thing and it just spins around, sits on the table. And my daughter, who was like 2.5 years old at the time or whatever, goes and picks it up and wants to play with it and look at it. And he was really worried about it breaking, this particular family member, and kind of rushes over and tries to take it from her to make sure that it doesn't break. In the act of taking it from her, slips out of his hands and falls on the ground and breaks. He was trying to avoid it breaking and he was so focused on the outcome that he snatched something away from it. From a toddler and then broke it himself. It actually got to the same thing. Like same type of thing, right? If you try and avoid a hard conversation with your boss, you're at work and there's a hard conversation that has to be had and you try to avoid it. It's like, well, the more you try and avoid it, the closer you're going to get towards it being a really hard conversation. Usually having it sooner is going to get you a better outcome.
Yeah.
you don't know what the better outcome is. You don't know what all the outcomes are. We're limited in our minds, in our very parallel, narrow thinking minds to be able to think outside the box. And so if we know that something's the right thing to do, do it sooner, not later. And if we're not certain that the course of action that we gutturally want to take is the right action or the right course, well then just pause a little bit and just watch from a distance.
That's a very good point. And I agree in terms of whether you call it faith or, you know, putting trust in something. I think there is a certain power in that, right? So I remember Manny Pacquiao, who is a devout Christian, what he does when he, you know, goes into the ring, people are actually talking about him saying he seems to be enjoying himself the moments before a fight. And the reason is because he's done all he can in training. He's pretty much just left the outcome of the fight often, you know, in the hands of God, as he would say it. And quite often, because he's not plaguing himself with all the outcome and the stress involved in that, the outcome is usually better for him because he's free to flow and fight and do as he will. And usually the outcome is better because he doesn't plague himself with the outcome. And so I definitely agree with the point you're making there. So moving on to lesson number 7, a very cryptic one yet again. Yet, if, and when.
Well, the emphasis, this is all about language. You remember how we were talking about before about Tony's triad, and we were talking about where we, the type of questions that we ask and where we're focusing. Well, the language is regarding to the meaning. And when we start to say something like, I'm just not good enough, I can't do it, this isn't going to happen, or this is definitely going to be a failure, those types of things that we start saying to ourselves, it influences the outcome. Now, if we start to change the language that we're using, we start saying, well, hang on, how about if we have a growth mindset? What if we have the belief that I can overcome any obstacle which comes my way if I choose to overcome it? Well, then there's no destination in this personal growth. You can never stop growing. You just start saying, I can't do it. I can't do it yet. I will be able to do it when this and this and this. Okay, great. What's that when? How can you get that within your control? Or a mentor of mine actually shared this ages ago. She's quite incredible. But she shared that her main rule in life when dealing with other people is if, using if. So if someone comes up to her and says, I want to buy out your, like, I want you to give me 50% of your engineering company for free. She'll think, okay, well, I can't say no. Can't say no, because my rule is I've got to say if. So then she needs to think, well, what would that if be? It creates opportunity, creates potential. And she starts thinking, well, yes, if you are capable of coming on board and generating 10 mil of revenue without getting paid a cent for it, then you can have 50% of the year. Great.
Wow.
Right? Okay. Yep. Like there's an if. Most people just go, no, not happening. There's a Shazad Chamanai approach to this. He wrote a book called Positive Intelligence. Yep. He talks a lot about our saboteurs and what's dragging us down. And one of his power games is play the fascinated anthropologist. If you are seeing this for the very first time, you're just a kid. You don't have any judgments. You don't know what's good or bad or what should be or shouldn't be. What would you be saying? And if you start to take it from that lens, then you start to have a very different and very unique approach to how you're handling problems which are in front of you. If you can remember to do it in the moment.
That's something that I think we need to remind ourselves, but definitely, I think that mindset is very incredibly important. Lesson number 8, manage your own emotions before you try to manage others.
Yeah, okay. So this is cool. We've alluded to this a few times throughout the conversation, right? When you try and do something, but it's really hard, you're getting frustrated when something's supposed to happen and it's not easy or it doesn't feel easy, right? These types of things come up. And all too often, we try and change how other people are. All too often, like it's those people need to change, like outside of me. And that's because it's always driven by how we feel inside. But we're not always aware of it. So with sufficient awareness, we can start to address our own emotions first instead of trying to ultimately distract ourselves from some other drama inside of us. So part of this is why people love, like, I don't know, like the cheesy Korean dramas, for example. People love it because there's all this drama which is outside of them. Think of a movie that you've ever seen that everyone's happy and everyone's going wonderfully and everything continues to go really happy and wonderful and there are no challenges and everything's really pleasant and it's really nice and you kind of keep watching and it's nice and everyone's happy and and then it's the end of the movie.
Seriously.
Boring. How boring could you possibly get, right? There's going to be challenge. There's going to be some type of hurdle that needs to be overcome. And usually that's most beautiful as a result of diving within first and diving deeper down inside first. And so as part of all of this, we need to start recognizing that if we look at what's within, then we'll start to see that the drama that's outside of us, if it's outside of us and we're trying to get involved in it, well, that's our doing. Stop worrying about their emotions. Start focusing on yourself. And if it's just from within us and we see it, say, well, okay, it's just there. Anytime that I notice for me, this comes up most of the time, which is when I really notice it, is when there's a lot of resistance coming from a lot of other people. Like, stop being so resistant to me. Stop being so resistant to me. Why are these things getting so hard? All that kind of stuff, right? And it starts to keep showing up. And I'm like, them. So hang on a second. Let's flip the angles. Let's flip the direction. Me. Oh, got it. I'm the one that's creating resistance. I'm the crazy one saying that everyone else is crazy. Mm-hmm. So think of a time that you told someone to just relax. Actually, even better, think of a time that someone told you, relax, will you? Like, just relax, take it easy, stop getting so emotional. It was most likely because you were uncomfortable with their emotions, which is why they were telling you to relax. Otherwise, why would you be telling them to change, right? Like, why would they be telling you to change if they didn't see that within you as well at the same time?
But it takes a whole lot of awareness. So I guess, you know, this is what you exactly what you're saying. Yeah, you need to be aware of your own emotion. And you're right. Most of us probably don't take that into consideration. Most of the time, we're more focused on what other people are doing to us.
Yes.
Rather than the other way around. How do you change yourself?
How do you change yourself? Like, how do you change your own emotions? I mean, become more aware of what the emotions are first, just like what we've been discussing. I use meditation. I teach meditation because of how passionate I am towards the impact that it has on people's lives. I can't think of it ultimately a better tool or better resource, but start reading personal development books if you want to. But instead of just reading it and going, oh, that's great. I'm so happy with that. That was so wonderful. I'm so glad I finished that book. Look how much smarter I am now. Yeah. Read the book and stop at the end of the chapter when they've got a practical activity, or make up a practical activity as you're going along. How can I apply this in my life? How can I apply this in my life? How can I apply this? And when you keep doing that, then you start to reflect, okay, these are the ways that I can grow. These are the ways that I can improve. These are the ways that things can get better. So that's how you ultimately change. You focus on what's within your control or within your level of influence. And that is the way that you feel and your awareness of the way that you're feeling.
Lesson number 9, you're standing on the shoulder of giants now.
Okay. Well, this is a fun one. I mean, you got to recognize that no matter what you've done in life or who you are, if you're even listening to this conversation, it's because of life and chance and events that have all happened before you. Like, you wouldn't be able to listen to this conversation if people hadn't created the technology. Those people would be able to create the technology if people before them hadn't created the technology that they were using. Those people would be able to create that technology if they didn't have the written word and text and speech. And if you can't do all these things, like, it goes way back. The success that you've achieved today is as a result of the tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of years of time in the past. So, which means you can either ignore the impact of history of all time, or you can choose to embrace it. If you ignore it, you're going to keep going like you feel like you have no answers, and you keep spinning your wheels and you don't get any traction. You keep going the wrong direction, or you embrace it and you're accepting you don't have all the answers and you never will, but you'll get so much closer if you simply learn from those who are before you. Yep. So this is where I talk about mentors. This is where I talk about reading personal development books. This is where I talk about listening to a podcast on personal growth rather than, I don't know, some comedy thing on radio or whatever it is. Like, this is where it comes to reading a empowering book or speaking to someone that you really respect or admire rather than sitting down and watching Netflix. Like, it's all valuable, but if you want to do even better, then recognize that everything you've already done has come from all those before you. And either you just go, okay, cool, I'll just take it. Or you go, I appreciate this and I really respect it.
Yeah. And that's true. Like, all the problems you're trying to solve, the chances are somebody else has already done it before. And why would you reinvent the wheel when you can stand on the shoulders of giants and go a hell of a lot further? with the progress that they've, you know, with the hard work and all the stuff that they've done before you. So 100%. Yep, agree. Lesson number 10, your strength lies within you, not without you. Again, be cryptic. Not really sure what that means.
Okay, cool. So basically, the idea of this is that most of the time we think that everything's outside of us. I'll be happy when this happens. I'll be happy when that happens. I'll feel safe when I have the really impressive lock on the door, or I'll feel successful when I have the nice car or the yacht or the house or whatever it is, right? Then I'll be good enough. Then I'll be good enough to be loved. No, that's not for you, right? I'll just say insert value here, right? Your happiness, your achievement, your success, your feeling good, your positive emotion, your empowerment, whatever the word is, it lies within you, not outside of you, right? You're not without it. It's already part of you and you're just blocking it. You're habitually blocking it. So if you realize that it's already within you, then you'll be able to start to experience it. And if you start to release it, then and release the things which are holding back from your ability to really see your strength within you, then you'll be able to start to, you'll be released by this kind of like this ownership that it has over you. It owns you, these thoughts. And like, when I have that, then I'm going to be happy. When I get that promotion, then I'm going to feel good about myself. Right? No, just if you're able to recognize that you're already, just like what you were talking about, Manny Pacquiao, right? He's already done all the hard work. He's already put in the effort. He's already put in the energy. He's already put in the focus. He's then trusting the process, but he's also just releasing all the expectations. And he knows that the strength lies within him, not outside of him.
Yeah, so
if he was in the ring and he keeps looking over to his coach, am I doing it right? Am I doing it right? He'll get hit with a right hook. he'll be flat down on the ground. He's got to focus on what's within me.
Yeah. So, and it's that just shift of mindset yet again, right? It's understanding that if you've already got it within you, it's a very, very different feeling to, you know, that it's something that you have to acquire before you can have. And I suppose you can call it sort of unleashing the, you know, this actually reminds me a little bit about the whole Tony Robbins, unleashing the giant within kind of mindset. Yep. But ultimately it's very, very different, right? If you've already have it, then the approach would be very different. So now, my favorite part of every interview, we like to throw a little curveball to our guests. And that is, what have you unlearned? So something that you believe to be absolutely ironclad truth when you're younger in your life, and then later on that you just figured out that it just wasn't the case.
A few things come to mind. Mm-hmm. The first would have been that I know everything, that I have all the answers. I genuinely believed as ironclad truth that I already have all the answers. I don't need any answers from anybody else. Nothing else is important. I've worked it all up myself, right? Like, and it could have been as simple as when I was younger and I was learning to park the car, as like when I was just learning to drive. It's like my mom or dad or instructor is like, hey, why don't you just try listening to me? It's like, no, I'm not going to listen. I'm going to get this myself. Man, it would have been so much better if I just listened. Or reading books. People who have spent their careers focusing on something like 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years, and then they spend a whole amount of time condensing that knowledge into something you can actually absorb. It's like, absorb it. Like, don't think you can work that out yourself. Or if you can, even if you're as exceptional as them, it's going to take you a lot longer. Mm. The second point that I was thinking of is I needed to unlearn what I thought was real value in my life. And I learned it's not just money or status. Externally, yes, money is important. Your level of influence is important as well. Like those things are important to have. But what's real value is all what's internally. The peace and the joy that you're able to experience in every moment, that's within you. And that kind of makes me think of the third one, which is I need to unlearn my significance in the world, or what I thought of my significance in the world. I'm nowhere near as significant as I thought that I was. And so there was a period of time where I lived my life. I attempted to straddle these two. I still do occasionally. I attempted to straddle these two ideas of that life is entirely about you and not at all about you at the same time. And I used to attempt to recognize that, because life is so fragile, that what if I live my life as if this is my last day on earth, and as if it's the first of another 60 years to come. And I live my life with both of those as holding true at the same time. How would my life look? That's a fun challenge for people, but that's something which I needed to relearn or unlearn.
Wow. That is very profound, and Harry, and you know, and we'll finish on that note.
Jeff, thanks for having me on here. I really do feel humbled that you've included me, and that hopefully that some of these thoughts and some of the lessons that I've learned in life that I'm sharing are of value to the listeners. And I really appreciate the impact that you're producing in the world as a result of this podcast and the content you're putting out there. So thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for that, Harry. And we'll finish on that note. You've been listening to 10 Lessons Learned, the podcast that makes the world a little wiser, lesson by lesson. We're joined today by our special guest, Harry Goldberg. This episode is produced by Robert Horsery and sponsored by the Professional Development Forum. Don't forget to leave us a review or comments. You can even email us at podcast@10lessonslearned.com. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so that you don't miss an episode of the only podcast that makes the world a little wiser, lesson by lesson. Thanks for tuning in, and stay safe, everyone.